Okay, lots to get to today. Welcome to Hockey Central, Jeff Merrick, alongside Justin Bourne. Bottom of the hour, Ian McIntyre will drop by. We'll talk about the Vancouver Canucks situation after JT Miller's comments. Kind of got the tongues wagging and the brains thinking. More on that in a couple of moments. Meanwhile, Justin Bourne, Maple Leafs facing off against Winnipeg Jets this evening. Some news coming out of Maple Leaf camp, namely Austin Matthews out. He is considered day-to-day as per head coach Sheldon Keefe. Adam Brookstraw's in, Nick Robertson out of the COVID protocol right now, so he's good to go. William Nylander could skate after he passes one more COVID test. That could happen tomorrow. Jack Campbell gets a start tonight. Rodion Amarov signs his 3-year entry-level deal with the Maple Leafs, who will report to the Marlies. Of all these stories, I'm going to throw it over to you. Where would you like to begin?
Oh, boy. I don't know. You worried about Matthews? Sheldon said this is not the same. Oh, excuse me. I just had to sneeze and had to mute my mic. are you worried about Matthews? It's not the same injury, but it's something kind of related or kind of like it. That doesn't sound good. I don't like that. I'm a Leafs fan. No. Do you?
No.
No. Not good. Not good. Mm-hmm. It also brings to light how quickly you're into players that make you go, oh, can he do it? Like Adam Brooks is in now because they have two guys out of the lineup. That's, I don't know. He hasn't played yet this year, so good to get a look at the kids, I guess, here down the stretch.
Yeah, John Tavares playing with Galchenyuk and Marner at practice today. So Adam Brooks is in. Nick Robertson returns as well. Winnipeg played last night, beat the Ottawa Senators, so it's a back-to-back for them. Leafs are 3-0 without Austin Matthews in the lineup so far this evening. I don't know. I don't know what to say about this one, or I don't think you can hot take this one in any stretch here, other than if you're a Maple Leafs fan, you're concerned. You'd be concerned if he misses not just today, but subsequent games, maybe tomorrow as well, where the Maple Leafs are scheduled to face off against the Vancouver Canucks. We'll see if that ends up happening. More on that in a couple of moments. I want to ask you about Rodion Amarov, not the player himself, but the nature of acclimatizing a player coming from overseas into the program. So when you were with the Marlies, how many players did you have to do this with?
Well, you know, from overseas, none. But, you know, there were deadline deals and call-ups and trades and, you know, a dozen players that, you know, we had to get on the same page. Would you like me to go through the kind of the process, how they do that?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So essentially, every coach has their special department, right? You know, whether the assistant coach is one guy has a power play, one guy has a penalty kill, the goalie does his thing. Mm-hmm. And so depending on the player coming in, you would do individual meetings and you would try to keep them casual. So in our coaches' cases, they take their laptop into the room, find the guy, and just sit down with him for 5 minutes. Not try to overload his brain, but just say, hey, you know, welcome to the team. I do the penalty kill. You're a penalty killer. Here's what it looks like when we do it right. This is what our penalty kill looks like when we execute it properly. And we have a handful of clips that have been pre-cut as great, as perfect examples of our execution. And they take a look. And then that guy would get left alone for a little while. After practice, maybe another guy would grab him and say, hey, you're probably going to play with these two guys. Here's how they like to play. A couple of clips of these guys when they play great. And just basically slowly showing them what it looks like when it's done right in hopes that that's all they need to see, right? They don't need to see the bad clips. They don't need to be overloaded with hours of video. Just bring them along slowly. And that obviously gets harder with a language barrier, but there are ways around that now. And, you know, you just make the player as comfortable as you can early on.
You know, Amarov's an interesting guy as well, and he's someone that had already gone through a draft, was selected 15th overall in the last NHL draft, the Alexi Lafreniere draft. And I know there are a lot of Maple Leafs fans that wanted like a Braden Schneider or a Caden Gooley or like a big defenseman from the Western League. Didn't get that. They got at 15th overall a very highly skilled winger. And the one thing we know about the Maple Leafs in their drafting is the first thing that Dubas says is, look, if the guy can't skate, not that you put him on a do not draft list, but let's find someone else, essentially. And the kid can skate, the kid can score. He's a slick forward, and he seems very much like a Dubas-era Toronto Maple Leafs pick. Yeah. How much have you seen Amaroff?
Like, I think most people, I've seen the highlights, right? So, like, in my mind, he's the greatest scorer of all time. All I've ever seen him do is shoot the puck in the net. You know, like, it's like an Ilya Mikheyev came over. You know, I think Dan Milstein, his agent, had, like, a YouTube video of all of his goals. I'm like, wow, they're getting Russian Gretzky. This is unbelievable. So it's tough to know the flaws in a player, you know, that's coming over. But what I love about the way Dubas has executed his drafts is that they've drafted for high upside. You know, in every situation where it could be whatever, Nick Ritchie or William Nylander or, you know, was it Marner or Strome? Like, they take the guy with the higher upside and just think that you can fill in the intangible stuff other guys may offer, the grit and toughness and heaviness and all that. Amaroff fits the bill, right? He's another guy who can provide elite high-end talent. If he reaches a ceiling, you just can't believe other teams passed on him. If he doesn't, well, you know, you think you can find the type of players that you would have picked instead of him, the players that you mentioned, Jeff.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm very much of the belief, and it feels like, and it certainly looks like when you look at the draft, Dubas feels the same way. It's a lot easier to buy grit than it is to buy skill. Like, yeah. If you're going out to the market to try to find something, like, Justin, is it not UFA easier to go out and trade for or sign grit than it is to sign skill? Like, if you have skilled players, teams generally don't let go of those guys at all. That's a hard thing to find.
I think part of the reason Freddie Gauthier got such a tough rap here in Toronto was that they drafted him because he was a big guy they thought could play in their bottom six. Like, first-round pick, never draft someone you think might play in your bottom six, because you can find a million people to go play. Well, not a million, but you know what I mean. A lot of people to go play in your bottom six. It's really, really hard to get the guys above that. So, the point you make is a good one.
Further to that point, though, that is interesting. Because I can remember when Brendan Shanahan came in, there were conversations about the scouting. And with the Maple Leafs, traditionally, before Shanahan took over, the scouting was considered to be too safe. And you know what scouts are like. I got my guy in the NHL. Oh, this guy made it to the NHL. Oh, this guy got in. We sent one to the NHL. There were too many safe picks. Like, you look at Gauthier, for example. And as a scout, if your only concern is getting that player into the NHL, Freddie Gauthier was a safe pick. Because he was going to the NHL. Now, he wasn't going to play a top six role like he did in Rimouski in the queue, but he was going to the NHL. And it seemed as if there was that complacency when it came to drafting with the Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. Just get them to the league. And I remember Shanahan came in and he talked about, and Nylander would have been the first one. I think Nylander would have been the first pick with Shanahan. And that was under the philosophy of, you know, we need to swing for a fence here. You know, we can't just take the safe guy that's going to make it to the NHL. We need to be able to try to draft a great player or someone that has the upside of a great player.
Yeah, it's the LOL in every draft year for the Toronto Maple Leafs the last few years. Like, let's see which 5'9" forwards the Leafs draft this year. You know what it is. You go through the draft list and it's like, is anyone 6 feet tall? No? Okay. But that's because they believe in the later rounds, one of the reasons that elite players drop is size, and so that you can get more value on some of the overlooked guys who, let's face it, these kids are 17 years old. They might still grow. So let's not draft based on size today, draft on skill today, and see how it goes from there. So it makes sense what they do, but it is funny that, like, the team for years, people have been like, they need grit, and they're like, what about Dennis Malgin's twin brother? What about Nick Patan's brother? You know, like, those type of players.
Okay, speaking of draft picks, Nick Robertson was, of course, a draft pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He was a second rounder, back available for the Maple Leafs. They'll face off against the Winnipeg Jets. When you talk about, you know, ceiling and upside and where the player is going to fit, where's there going to be a fit here for Nick Robertson?
Well, it ain't where he's playing right now. No. That's not the answer. You can't play him with Scott Sabourin and, you know, Pierre Engvall or whoever and hope to get value out of him. But here's the thing they like about Nick Robertson is, like, if they put him in that situation, they don't expect him to score. So they're not going to hold out against him if he doesn't, and he's not, you know, he's not going to do what he'll play in the NHL for, and they know that. But he's also someone who works, and he'll work hard, and he'll do the little things. Like, this guy's commitment to the game is insane. You know, passed up a chance to win a gold medal in the World Juniors to increase his chances of playing in the NHL, and this season has not gone his way. Like, it's been unfortunate with the way, obviously with COVID and how many AHL games there's been and taxi squad, it's just been really tough for him to get in and find his footing. So he's not in a great spot in the lineup, but he's in the lineup and they know he'll do whatever they ask. And that's a credit to him, and it's part of the reason they like him.
Leafs have dropped a pair of games so far this week to Montreal and then most recently to the Calgary Flames. They'll face off against the Winnipeg Jets this evening, a team that beat the Ottawa Senators last night. What do we look for this evening? Well, we should point out as well, Freddie Anderson on the ice today. No update about return, etc., but just to make sure that it's out there, Freddie was on the ice today. But what do you look for in the Winnipeg-Toronto matchup?
I guess this is, you know, if you're a Jets fan, you got a shot at catching the Leafs. It's not over. You know, this is the, I think they play each other four times down the stretch. The Jets have actually a very tough schedule the rest of the way. I think they got the Leafs four times, the Habs four times, the Oilers somewhere in there. But anyway, it's these are big games for them. If they can get a couple of regulation wins head-to-head, all of a sudden things might tighten up down the stretch. So the Leafs have a chance to kind of put them away with a win or two. Let's see if the Jets can make things interesting in the North Division.
Did you watch much of Calgary-Montreal last night?
You know what, Jeff? I did. I had it on. I'll be honest. I find it tough to watch Calgary right now. I know they won the game.
Oh, I'm with you. Listen, Colby Armstrong talked in a couple of the intermissions, and we talked about, you know, Sutter hockey, translation, low event hockey, translation, throw a lot of mud in the neutral zone and slow everybody down, and let's dull the blades. And, oh, yeah, like it's...
And like
Calgary's they're tough to watch. Like, you're right. Like there's no way to sugarcoat it. Calgary's a tough team to watch
this,
right now.
They are. And Jeff, I said this to someone else the other day. Like, if you went through every team and said, "Give me three guys you love to watch on that team," you know, you could do it just about to every team. Tough on Calgary. I love watching Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah. For me, that would be Matthew Tkachuk, Jacob Markstrom, and Andrew Mangiapane.
Andrew Mangiapane is a must-watch guy, huh? Or just enjoy
him. Well, if you're like three guys that you enjoy, I'm not saying must-watch, but enjoy watching. I really like Mangiapane. I think a lot of that might be just my bias because I watched him a ton playing Barry in the OHL for Dale Hawerchuk, and I like him, and I think that that's one of those guys that Calgary has sort of ticketed him, and that guys like Dylan Dubé going to be the future of that organization. But I'm with you. Like, it's... These are tough games to watch. These are tough games to watch right now. But that's a game that, you know, if you're Montreal, like you go into that game last night, Elliot brought this point up. If you're Montreal, you need to show that you have a killer instinct. Because you're going to play these guys, was it five times in 7 nights, like, you know, in 7 games, you need to be able to snuff this team out. Like, that's the team that's kept trying to catch you for that final playoff spot. Going into last night, the gap was 6. The gap is 4 now. Now, Montreal still has 3 games in hand, so they get the math, but still, not to put too much of a point on one game, and these two teams will play again on Friday, and the next week they'll play back-to-back. But if you're Montreal, how do you not try to just plant a dagger last night?
Well, that's the thing. Like, a single win in one of these games here pretty much ends it. Like, Calgary's just going to run out of runway. They got 13 hockey games left this season. They're only 4 points back, but 3 games in hand is not insignificant when you're looking at so few games remaining. But you're right. That did show a bit of a lack of killer instinct on Montreal's part. I still feel like the Habs can be a surprise team in playoffs, much like they were last season, where the goaltending gets really hot. We know they're great at driving shots, and if all of a sudden they get a little shooting luck or the other team's goalie plays bad, like, you think they could do damage. So I'd like to see them find that a little bit here, and that seemed like an opportunity, but the Flames, as much as they're dying to be put out of their misery, they continue to zombify the zombie Flames win again.
3 wins in a row. Like, what can you say? The interesting thing to me about the Montreal Canadiens, and I don't know what the right answer is to all of this, and maybe it's just different based on your personnel. And to me, there's always been a fine line between we have enough players for depth versus we have too many players that don't have an opportunity and now they're all cranky about it. Like, we talk a lot about how many players Montreal has picked up, and I'm sure you've seen this plenty of times. When you have a lot of players and players that are used to playing and they don't play, and they've just been brought on for a depth in the playoffs at any position, can that not cause a lot of problems?
Yeah. You know, I'm working on something right now just about the realities of the competitive environment in pro sports and how your opponents are obviously, you know, the people you're trying to beat, but your biggest opponents in your personal career are the people in the room, unfortunately. Like, if you're a right winger, the people you need to be better than are the other right wingers on your team to get the opportunity, to get the points, to get the money. It's all very real, and unless you're like a guy who's got a 5-6-7 year deal, that's a very real competitive thing, and the Canadians have that.
There's a great old saying, I don't have to run faster than the bear. I just have to run faster than you.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It's worse in the minors, right? Like, in the minors, we're in a sport that rewards team success and doing the things that help your team win. But boy, yeah, is it more important that you just play better than the other right wingers on your team if you're a right winger.
Amen. Okay, Ian McIntyre is going to join us here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll get more into this. But I wanted to get your thoughts on what we heard from JT Miller last night. And I'll read you the quote, or one of the quotes, because there were many. And interestingly enough, Vancouver put the quotes up on their Twitter feed last night, yet we heard no comment either out of management or ownership about it. This is JT Miller voicing concerns about the Vancouver Canucks being asked to return to action Friday against Edmonton after only one practice, and that would be today. Quote, it's kind of frustrating if I'm being 100% honest with you. We've tried to talk about the number one priority is players' health and their family's safety. It's almost impossible to achieve that with what they've asked to do here on our return. So they're scheduled to play the Oilers on Friday, the Maple Leafs on Saturday. Now, as Elliot pointed out on TV last night, some teams have had three practices before coming back when a team is shut down. The New Jersey Devils only had one, and then they came back to play. So it's not unprecedented. No one has seen the gap that Vancouver has gone through, and that may be where it differs. But the one thing that I actually, before I bias into this, what are your thoughts on this? What were your thoughts when you heard JT Miller yesterday?
Well, I think he's 100% right. It kind of makes you a little uncomfortable watching this whole thing because it's so obvious they just shouldn't play hockey anymore. Like, you know, the whole team has been affected by this, and we're 3 weeks from the end of the season, essentially 3 weeks or a month. They got to play the Senators 4 times. You know, like, I understand that there's some commitments, financial commitments from sponsors and all the rest, but there's a human element involved here where a sponsor would look good to me by forgiving the debt of enough hockey games and saying, all right, you don't have to play every game. Don't kill yourselves over this. You know, we'll call it square. We understand you've been through a lot, because them playing these games, particularly the games against the Senators, is pointless. Well, I do not understand it, and JT Miller's right.
There are some people in the league that believe that those games actually are important. You know they're important?
Draft, maybe? I don't know.
Draft lottery.
Yeah.
That those games mean something. If the draft lottery is going to mean something, those games are meaningful. The thing that we'll get into this with Ian McIntyre at the bottom.
Can you split the games? Okay, we'll take 2 wins. You take 2 wins. See you later.
Listen, I know what you're saying, and I listened to JT Miller yesterday, and initially I'm like, whoa, this is, you know, raising a big issue here, and I'll never fault someone for speaking from the heart. The only thing that gives me pause on this one is the players signed off on the plan. The Players Association signed off on the plan. The NHL signed off on the plan. And doctors signed off on the plan.
Right.
Everybody signed off on everything
here,
until... Okay, but no, I understand that. But is the place to voice that a Zoom call? Or do you go to your team? Do you go to the Players Association? Like, everyone at the PA was as shocked as everybody else was when they heard the comments yesterday. It's like, whoa. Where does that come from?
Well, I honestly, I can't imagine they don't know where it comes from, and that it feels unjust, and it feels, you know, it's a very fair comment from a guy who, you know, they're being put in a really bad spot here. I think they play, after weeks off here in one practice, five games in 7 nights. Like, that's not, the league doesn't want that in under normal circumstances, let alone
then
guys
why,
who say they're having trouble walking.
Why sign off on it then? Then why sign off on it in the first place?
I don't know that they signed off agreement to that, you know?
They did. Everybody has signed off. Ian can fill us in more here at the bottom of the hour, but everybody agreed to this.
You know, to me, it's a guy, it's like, I know going into this, if you're the Canucks players, you're like, we agreed to do, you know, X, Y, Z. I guess we got to do this. Sure. You know, we'll do it. But you don't have to like it, for one. And there's, I think, an element in the big picture for the league and us to look at, like, should we really be doing this? What if someone gets badly hurt in this game on the Canucks because they're not in shape enough to get out of the way of something, which is when injuries happen? Like, the NBA is going through this right now, Jeff, where they're worried that their schedule is causing a rash of injuries unlike they've ever seen before.
Oh, listen, the string of, and we talked about this with Montreal as well, when their schedule was all changed, and here come the four-game weeks. And you can do it once. They got, but then you look at, like, week after week after week of playing four games in 7 days. Like, there's danger associated with that. Like, I know you can say, oh, there's risk associated with hockey, and they all assume that risk when they play. But now you have, you know, actively the schedule working against you. I understand all that. It's dangerous. It's risky. The NHL seems to be out of runway for a lot of this stuff. We should mention as well, Vancouver Canucks players meeting with medical officials today. I personally am of the belief that tomorrow's game won't get played. I just believe that. I don't know that, but that's the way it feels to me right now.
I feel the
same way. I can't speak to Saturday, but I do have a belief inside of me that Friday's game will probably be postponed.
Well, I think they said that there's such a mass of players that need to be cleared from the COVID protocols and all that, that there may be enough players who are cleared technically health-wise by COVID, but aren't cleared medically due to cardiovascular reasons or whatever by their own medical staff. So they may end up having their whole taxi squad in the lineup because some of these guys can, you know, got a VO2 max of 9 seconds on the treadmill. You know, it's like, it's they need to have enough healthy players COVID-wise, but also just healthy players to play the games.
Ian McIntyre at the bottom of the hour on this one. Something else I wanted to get your thoughts on. I know you love talking about crap like this. Did you see Max Pacioretty score yesterday from the blue line?
You know what? I actually didn't, Jeff. No.
So he just flipped it in. Like, he just flipped it towards a goaltender, and it bounced in past the goalie.
I'm finding
There have been players we've seen flip the puck. This was Jim Dorey's nickname. He'd get the puck out of his zone by flipping it, and his nickname became Flipper. J.C. Tremblay was famous for flipping the puck. We've seen it as tactics before. Doughty to Kopitar, like, as a pass. We've seen that. It happens every now and then, and I always ask the question, why don't more players do this? Just flip pucks so they drop in front of the goaltender. Because you know where they're going? No one knows. Mm-hmm. No one has a clue.
Do you remember it was... Yeah. Was it Al MacInnis who used to take slap shots off the toe of his blade? You know, like the long icing shots, used to like intentionally hit knuckle pucks. I think Nick Lidstrom used
really,
to as well.
Eh? Why is that?
Yeah, like in terms of like when they were shooting the puck into the zone and they wanted to put it on the goalie, they'd hit it off the toe because you'd get more end over end knucklers and a less predictable flight on the puck than just a nice hard crisp one. So I think there is some value in that for sure. I did just look at that Pacioretty goal. That is hilarious.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how many opportunities you get to calculate that.
My point. Well, I can't remember who dumped it in on Jake Allen last night from the Calgary Flames, but it's obvious. Like, we've seen dump-ins towards a goaltender looking for a face-off. Like, it's a set play. It's like, okay, we got nothing. We need to change.
Yeah.
Let's just try to get a face-off in the offensive zone here. Let's just dump it into the goaltender. And it's not Carey Price, so he's not going to fire it back. Chances are Jake Allen's going to cover it. He didn't, but it was a sort of obvious play. Jennifer Botterill pointed this out right away. She noticed that. She's like, that's a forced face-off. But I always wonder, if you're going to do that anyhow, why not a flip?
Yeah, go for it. No, it's a smart play. Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of giving yourself a shot at a bonus goal by doing something weird like that. Anything from distance, that's a yeah. good one for the children to try. Go for the skipper if you can. A little bit off the toe, a bit of a knuckle puck.
We just look at it as like, oh, what a freakish thing. I kind of look at it as that's a smart tactic.
What do you think, Patrick? You're goalie, like you just get your body in front of it and hope it doesn't bounce, basically.
I think you just sort of you try to play it like a back catcher. Like on a wild pitch, and you just sort of, all right, I'm getting my arm. I'm just trying to like keep it in front of me.
Like, yeah,
I'm not going to make a save or deflect this anyway or channel it somewhere. I'm just hoping this thing bounces off my chest and I can put my glove on it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Honestly, it's just one of those things that I've always wondered about.
You just want someone today to have a cool nickname like Flipper.
Jim Dory. Jim Dory was the guy, right? Defenseman for the Maple Leafs in the 70s. That was his nickname. We need another Flipper in the game. Yeah. That's essentially what I'm lobbying for. And right now, Max Pacioretty's looking like he might be the guy.
Flipper Patches.
What's that?
Flipper Patches. Sounds like Flipper child's Patches. Character in a cartoon or something. I love it.
Ian McIntyre coming up. Take a quick break. Talk about the JT Miller comments from last night and the fallout since. And do we see a game between the Vancouver Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers tomorrow? Talk about that. And Hockey Central returns. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to the program. Thanks to everyone for tuning in here live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan or listening to the podcast version of this available at your favorite pod catcher. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. Please be joined now by Ian McIntyre of Sportsnet and covers the Vancouver Canucks games. You always see him with Dan Murphy and he's here to share his expertise on this JT Miller situation. Ian, were you as shocked as everybody else was when you heard JT Miller's comments yesterday, or did you already have a sort of inkling that there were some misgivings by certain Vancouver Canucks players about returning on Friday?
Well, I knew there were misgivings, but no, I'm not shocked by anything JT Miller says because you just don't know. The way he speaks to the media is kind of the way he plays. There's always it's straightforward. There's emotion. There's intensity. And frankly, I thought it was one of his finest moments as a hockey player in Vancouver that he had the courage to say what he said, because I can guarantee you this, he was not speaking alone. He was representing his team in what he said, and look at what he achieved. He has brought a spotlight on this issue about player safety, and people say, oh, this is a bad look for the NHL, you know, the schedule 19-31, and it's not a great look, but it's really not that different a look than what the New Jersey Devils and Buffalo Sabres had when they came out of their 2-week shutdowns. But to me, the really bad look in all this is on the National Hockey League Players Association, because that's the group that's supposed to be looking after the welfare of the players. Mm-hmm. But we also know, and this this isn't a conspiracy, and it's actually been a very positive arrangement, but they are business partners with the National Hockey League. So each dollar that's made or not made by a game being played or not played also affects the Players Association and its constituents. So that kind of puts them in a difficult position right now. But their overriding mandate, should it not still be to look after the well-being of their players? I think it should be.
We talked about this last night on television, and one of the points that came up was some surprise because the players signed off on this, the PA signed off on this, the NHL signed off on this, and doctors involved in this signed off on this return to play protocol. How would you look at that issue?
Well, I think the key is what do you interpret the players' component of that agreement. I don't think it was the Vancouver Canucks players who signed off on it. I think this is, and you're right that there are three parties involved. There's the league, the Players Association, and the Canucks. But again, because you're talking about, you know, revenue issues, I think from the Canucks standpoint, you're probably looking more at ownership decisions than decisions by hockey operations on this schedule. I think partly the reason that makes this situation different, I mean, there's always going to be a shock factor when you see a revised schedule. And again, to reference the Sabres and the Devils, other teams have gone through it. Dallas, of course, had the delayed start. Montreal just recently. Yeah. Each team that gets a revised schedule, there's probably a double take when you first see it, because it's rarely very good. But what makes this situation different, other than the time pressure involved, is there's two things. Number one, it's one thing to try, and Justin, you know, can speak to this. It's one thing to try and come back when you've missed some time early in a season. It's another thing to do it in the heat of a playoff race where everybody is on a full sprint. Everyone's, you know, yes, teams have injuries themselves, but everyone is in peak physical condition, peak form, and straining for the playoffs. And the Canucks haven't done anything since March 24th. So that's one key difference. The other thing that's a little harder to quantify, but it's the more dangerous aspect of this, is the Canucks have a as yet to be named variant in their outbreak. And by all accounts, their outbreak, both in scope and intensity, has been worse than anything else that has occurred to this point. There's not a whole lot of medical information right now on how players come back, depending on which variant it is. And we know that there's been several players who have had severe symptoms. Luckily, nobody has required hospitalization. And luckily, everybody is trending in the right way, but there's still some players who are sick. So that's the medical uncertainty and kind of the dangers associated with the new variants. That's what makes this situation different as well.
I realize hearing all that, and this is great information. Thanks so much. I realize hearing all that, this is kind of a generalized question, but like, I guess now what? Because it seems like, is there a chance they're going to cancel games and re-revise the schedule based on, you know, the Miller being outspoken about this? Is there a chance that we see a ton of players play in the NHL who haven't played in the NHL before because the Canucks just need bodies? Like, now what for this Canucks team?
Well, I think there is a chance, and others have reported it this morning as well, that there is a chance that the schedule in the short term for this weekend immediately, the Friday game, the Saturday game, there is a chance that those do get moved. There's a lot of evaluation going on, as you can imagine, right now medically on these players, a lot of discussions. The PA had a Zoom conference call last night with Canuck players to get their input. And there's also medical parties. It's not as simple as just the Canucks doctors deciding. There's medical parties from the PA and the NHL as well, who are involved anytime there's protocol, anytime there's a COVID case. So there's multiple medical parties involved as well. I think the big question is, if say there's a statement later today that Friday's game is not going to be played and the Canucks will start on Saturday, I don't think that would be stunning. The bigger question now is, if you are going to revise it again, are you still going to play 19 games? And are you still going to keep May 16, which is already nearly a week later than what the NHL wanted to go, are you still going to keep that as the end date? Because if you're still going to play 19 games and still keep it as the end date, obviously the schedule is going to be more compressed. And maybe that's the solution in this. I don't know, but maybe the solution needs to be that the Canucks don't play 56 games. But that has ramifications. That has impact on that partnership that I just spoke of between the NHL and the league, because now you're talking about revenue again at a time when the NHL is in a great recession and every team is straining for any dollar it can have in revenue, and the players as well. You know, their take-home pay has just been decimated by, you know, revenues and escrow. So, you know, that's a big, big decision if you're going to shorten the Canucks season from 56 games. But if you're not, I don't know how you can give players a little more time to recover this weekend and not kind of take it out of them later by having them play even more games in a shorter period of time.
And, you know, I think that's a great point, too, because at that point, it's no longer just a Vancouver Canucks issue, but it's also an NHL/Players Association issue, and specifically other players who, to your point, like, they're married financially to hockey-related revenue. And if there is any threat to that, or if there is any, you know, listen, they have to do another season to start by doing make goods, and let's all be on the same page. That bubble that we saw for the playoffs, that was all about make goods. And that was, you know, getting through that season, and that was to, you know, to make sure that they weren't going to be financially handicapped even more so in the future. This now turns into a situation where, listen, if we're starting to compromise all these games, and are they still going to play 19? And if not, what are the financial ramifications? I think other players look at Vancouver and say, well, hang on a second here. We're all assuming risk as well through all of it. And, you know, we've seen this whispered and talked about before. You know, how come Vancouver gets a pass on the rest of the season? And then that turns into, I mean, you've seen player turn on player before. Ian. I mean, you've been around the block with this league a few times. You've seen this, and you know how players think. Like that, that's where it becomes an issue amongst other players as well.
Yeah, well, for sure it does. And that's why this is such a complicated issue, because it's never just as simple as, well, what's the best thing for the 19 NHL players in Vancouver who have had COVID in the last 2 weeks. It's never that simple. I think probably having seen what they've seen from some of the other teams that have gone through outbreaks, I think there's probably a lot more sympathy in this case from players towards the Canucks than in almost any other, for any other reason, where you would have an imbalanced schedule and that one team didn't have to play as often as the other. I have a hard time believing, again, because players will have some, even if they haven't, you know, had COVID, and luckily most of them haven't, they've almost all been injured, and they've almost all faced times where maybe they were playing when they shouldn't be, because they had to be. I have a hard time believing that en masse there would be a very large constituency within the Players Association that would object if, for instance, the Canucks played 54 games instead of 56, or 52 instead of 56. Yeah. And I think that's what we're talking about here. You know, as far as I know, and I checked as of late yesterday, no player in Vancouver has hinted at opting out. They want to play. They want to finish this season. They just want to feel like they're not putting themselves at risk in the initial days after they come out of right. COVID protocol. So I don't blame them at all for that. And I honestly don't think their colleagues would blame him as well. I don't think Connor McDavid is, well, he's probably on the ice right now in practice in Edmonton, but I don't think he's thinking, man, if the Canucks don't play us tomorrow night, that's not fair. I think there's a fair level of empathy right now.
Do you think the salary cap will tangle the Canucks at all as they try to get sorted through this, if they have to bring up certain players and all that? I don't know where they are, but I know the Canucks are smacked up against it pretty tight. Could that be a complication for them in getting a full roster together?
Well, it is, among other complications logistically. You know, the biggest complication this team has had this year, and it hasn't been an issue until now, but they always knew it could be, is that the minor league team is in the U.S. And so you have a quarantine, and now the one-week quarantine that was amended by the federal government from 2 weeks partway through the season, that's a huge help. But it is still a very cumbersome process for the Canucks to get help from their minor league team. So they have a pool of players now. Excuse me. They have a pool of players now, including a couple that were loaned at the AHL level to Canadian teams who are now in Vancouver to supplement the numbers. They've also had players who, before the crisis began, were on the injured list. And a couple of them, and Tanner Pearson in particular, is very close to playing. So they're going to get some help that way. But they still have to make, as you point out, Justin, they still have to make all these numbers work. And there's going to be a lot of complicated transactions. There's going to be things on the transaction wire that people wonder about, but it's simply logistics that the Canucks are trying to maneuver. You can only have six guys on the taxi squad. You can't have 10. You still have to have, you know, your defined NHL roster, your defined taxi squad, and you can't just have extra players happen to be around town just in case. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't work. There is some flexibility with the players who have had COVID because they're designated as non-roster if they're unable to play due to illness. There's also one provision, and I believe that Toronto exercised it recently for Nylander and Montreal as well. There is a provision you can have essentially a free COVID recall that doesn't count against the cap.
So less than a million dollars.
Right. So there are some levers that the Canucks can pull here, but it is going to be awfully complicated. I mean, the only thing worse than being sick right now in Vancouver is if you're the capologist and you have to try to make this work. It's going to be a nightmare, but I think that they'll be able to maneuver, but it's going to take a lot of maneuvering.
That is an excellent point. I want to end on this one, and I was mentioning this to Justin earlier, Ian. I'm of the belief, again, I'm basing this only on how I feel. It's just an emotional thing. I have a hard time seeing Vancouver playing Edmonton on Friday. Doesn't feel to me like that is going to happen. I could be wrong, could be way off base. That's how it feels to me. If they do end up postponing that game, do they also have to do Saturdays? Like, is one extra day going to mean that much? Essentially, what I'm asking is, if they're going to do one, do they have to do two?
Well, interestingly, before the schedule came out, Elliot Friedman tweeted out. Of course, he gets all the scoops, right? But Elliot tweeted out that the target return date was the 19th, which is mm-hmm. the second Toronto game on the Monday.
Right.
And had that occurred, I'm not sure there would be the level of concern, certainly not the same level of concern from Canuck players, because most of them have now been on the ice. And by tomorrow, I think all but three of the players who have been in protocol theoretically could be available if, there's stipulations to it. It's not just you come out of COVID, you play. You know, there's cardiac screening, other medical testing, and then with a lot of injuries, you have to ramp up intensity under supervision to show that you're ready to play a game. But typically, if everything goes well, by the weekend, all but three of those players would be eligible to play, provided they satisfy this other criteria. So when you look at it that way, the weekend makes a big difference. Because one of the things that JT Miller said yesterday a couple of times was he talked about playing on one practice. Mm-hmm. And it's probably not even a full practice. And now the Canucks have banned us from the arena today. It was supposed to be open to the media. Now it's not going to be. So we won't even know how many guys are on the ice. But I suspect even today, it may not be a full practice. And mm-hmm. you can't play a game. And this is Miller's point. You can't. It's just not safe to play a game when you've been sick for the amount of time, inactive for the amount of time, right. Because there was a schedule break before that, and then to play on one practice. I think it would make a big difference if you gave the team until Monday so that they had three practices for some guys and at least one or two real practices for the last guys to come out of COVID protocol. I think that would be a big difference. But even one extra day, if they played Saturday, so they got another practice in Friday, at least it's one more day. But I think Monday would make the bigger difference.
Follow him on Twitter. IMAX Sportsnet is the handle. Ian, thanks so much for stopping by today. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Have a good day.
There he is, Ian McIntyre of Sportsnet, covering the Vancouver Canucks. As of right now, the schedule still says Vancouver, Edmonton, Friday. We shall see. More Hockey Central in a moment. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, Justin, we got a hot 30 seconds to conclude the program today. Nine games on the board around the NHL, including the Maple Leafs hosting the Winnipeg Jets. What, however, has caught your eye in the now 20 seconds that remain?
You can bet on Taylor Hall to get a point, over 0.5 points, and it'll pay you plus 102, which is really good. So go bet on Taylor Hall. Why not?
How cheated did you feel that he lost that assist?
It was an assist. I got robbed. They owe me money.
Bruins and Islanders tonight, 106 on, 9 on the board, rather. Leafs and Jets as well. Back tomorrow with more Hockey Central. Smith and Jones is next.